And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
That's what makes our show fun, is that we put very little effort into making it good, but it still turns out good. What's up, everyone? This is Joe, SML Podcast number 147, another interview episode for you today, and once again, no Pappy or Chris because they have lives and I don't. Special interview today, once again, calling from Croatia, but this time it's not the Starpoint Gemini guys. We have, hopefully I'm saying this right, Vedran Klanic?
You're pretty good.
I did all right. From Ocean Media... Vedran, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you're on our show today.
Okay, I'll just make a short introduction. I'm like a nerd guy who's making games since 1987. So, and for the last 12 years, I'm doing this, you know, like professionally, which means that, I get paid every month for this, when I'm working on.
It's a good career to have.
Yeah. So, we are talking about, my game Zotrix, which just came out on a PlayStation 4, and that is my first PlayStation 4 game. But basically, I'm running my own company, Ocean Media, for the last 9 years. Before that, I worked at Big Blue Bubble. That's the game developer. I have to advertise them a little bit because they have really a huge hit, which is called My Singing Monsters on the mobile. They're a company from London, Ontario, Canada. Before that, I worked at Crow Team. I worked on Serious Sam. I'm actually the guy behind the 3D physics engine for Serious Sam.
Oh, wow.
In last 2 years, I have decided to, after, you know, I was making a bunch of casual games, mostly, you know, like hidden object games, match-free games, and that kind of stuff for PC, Mac, and mobile platforms. And at one point, I decided to start and see how it is making like really like indie games, and that's how we ended up with making Zotrix, which was my long dream, which came true, to create like retro game, like a game that I used to play as a kid on arcade machines.
Yeah.
But I wanted to really put a new robe on it. Somehow to make it look like it's coming, like a retro game which is coming from the future, so to say. That was the basic idea. And I think we managed to achieve that as a team. The fact that we have passed green light on Steam, that was last year. It took us only 52 days.
Wow.
Without, you know, like just us couple of guys, without PR agencies, without, you know, any huge promotion machinery or anything like that. So the game really landed on a good ground when it comes to our fans. And in February 18th this year, we released the game on Steam on Early Access. And in July, end of July, it was released to full release. And things really played quite quickly for us because the game was noticed by a number of interested parties to say, and that's how we found a partner who helped us to bring the game to PlayStation 4, which is UFO Interactive from California. So that's that part. Meanwhile, while we were working and developing on PS4 version, we got also approved for Xbox One.
Which makes us at SML very happy because we are all Xbox One owners.
There you go. So we are now in the process. We already signed the contract with Microsoft, and practically we are waiting on dev kits to arrive, and then we are going to hammer out the game. Just last week, the game was also picked and approved by Nintendo.
Nice.
So we're gonna make it. We're gonna make it for Wii U, we'll see for other systems. It depends on certain business things next year related to us and resources if we're gonna have time. Like we have resources to make it for 3DS, but we'll see. I would like to prototype it and see, you know, how it fits. If it works, because at certain stages of the game really gets intensive in terms of the CPU consumption and all that. So it may be just too much for the 3DS, but nevertheless, we're going to try that. And we'll see about the future Nintendo system. Like we are licensed for all the Nintendo platforms, so it's pretty much just the matter if we're going to find time to push it all the way through. And that's pretty much in short about Zotrix. What I can say also is that PS4 version, which just came out, and it's coming, I think, any of these days, like today, tomorrow, it's coming also out in Europe. Last week, it was launched in North America. PlayStation Store, and this week is getting launched in the European.
Nice. So for the people who don't know what Zotrix is, give us the sales pitch on what the game is, how it plays.
It's really a twin stick space shooter, retro space shooter, which brings back the memories of like arcade machine games from 80s and 90s. Plus, I would say it has a flavor of Elite or that kind of games where you have, on top of the basic arcade missions, you have a system with resources, resource management. You can buy all kind of equipment, customize your fighter ship, and you know, go in battles and earn more money, more resources. You can trade resources and that kind of thing. So it has more than it meets the eye, you know, on the first glance. So it's when you really dive into it, then you know you can figure out that you can spend more than a couple of hours. Like originally we have planned the gameplay to have around 10 hours or something like that, but you know, I'm seeing players with like 20, 30, 40, 50 hours of gameplay on Steam. So it's obviously, you know, it's getting good traction with a lot of players.
Yeah, when I first saw the game, I thought it looked really interesting. I'm a big fan of twin stick shooters. I've poured way too many hours into the Geometry Wars series, into Polychromatic, even a game Orbit that was a twin stick arena battler game. We had a lot of fun with that. And I was like, Zotrix, that looks pretty cool. And I downloaded it and started playing it. And I had absolutely no idea how in-depth this game was going to be. My friend came in and I was like, dude, you've got to check out this game. It's on the PS4 now, but it's coming to the Xbox One next year. He's like, oh, well, what's it about? I'm like, all right, it's a twin-stick shooter with a campaign and resource management. And I'm going to try to impersonate him. His immediate reaction was, huh? Dude, he just He was shocked to see a twin stick shooter that actually had meat behind it instead of do a stage, kill some enemies, do a stage, kill some enemies, where you're jumping from area to area, taking care of missions, taking care of resource management, upgrades, ship upgrades, different expendable items. I have poured way too many hours into this so far, and I've barely had it that long. I just keep coming back to it, which honestly, for a PS4 game, is really impressive. So you get a lot of credit there.
Thanks a lot. I mean, that was one of my idea was like, I would like to really make this game so that I'm coming back and playing it, you know. So
yeah.
Even when I'm already moved to the next project, and you know. But like every day when I come to work, I spend, you know, at least I can't say how much, but it's way more than, you know, I should. Like, oh, I just had to check this and that. And it's like when we started testing the PS4 version, it ended up like every testing session would be like 2 hours or something. And it was like, oh, just a 15 minutes. So we test a couple of levels here, you know, like 2 hours later, like, oh, I just got this ship. I just unlocked this weapon. So it really is very, very, it really sucks you in.
Yeah, it quote unquote suffers from that incredibly positive issue of one more mission, one more stage, one more run. And 4 hours later, you're just like, son of a bitch, that wasn't one more run. I just missed dinner.
Yeah, and in PS4 version, we wanted and slash had to have something exclusive. So, and that is arcade mode. So, I can tell you that in Xbox One version, there's not going to be arcade mode.
Oh, that is a shame, because I really like the arcade mode.
Yeah, well, but there's something else, because there's something else exclusive to Xbox One version.
Is that something you could talk about, or is that kind of under wraps until next year?
Since we still, I wouldn't like to talk about it right now.
All right, I understand.
But it's also very cool. I think it's very cool. I'm really, I know it's a shame that we cannot have all this in all the versions, but that's the way how it is. You know, platform holder, you know, one wants to have something shiny in their own pocket. So we had to figure out, you know, different things. So anyway, the arcade mode, which we are also proud on, because that's really, you know, like if you don't want to go in like really beefy campaign mode, you can just, you know, pick up the arcade mode and really play it like it's on an arcade machine. There is 20 levels in the arcade mode, and you know, just go, and how much you survive, that's how long you get there, so you can compete and see how good you are. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, because you're one of the first other person than me, myself and my team, who played the game. How did you find the the sticks controls, like aiming and all this? Did you have a good feeling like that you can be like enough precise with aiming and shooting the enemies? How that worked for you?
I found it actually very precise. I noticed that it wasn't, at least for me, it didn't seem like it was pure 360 degree aiming. It seemed like there was I don't know how to explain it. It felt more like an analog, instead of analog, it was more digital, where it had set inputs of directions it would aim, but that actually made it a little bit easier, because it would seem to lock into a direction that I wanted it to go in.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if my description makes sense, because I'm terrible at describing some things.
No, it actually perfectly makes sense, and it really describes exactly what we did. Because when we were playing, this is like this, what you just described, is what we really intended to be the result. Because when we were testing, when you have like full 360, like analog kind of thing shooting, it's harder to play that way. We figured out that you're going to miss more enemies than this, because it's much easier to move your ship with one stick and to have like a number of fixed positions on your orientation. Now, as you were able to see, it's not that you have like eight directions. That's really more. It's, I think, around 48 angles, different angles.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not constricting that way. It had a lot of different positions that it was able, but I did notice that it wasn't pure 360 degree. And I did enjoy being able to just kind of lock into a direction, because a lot of times you'll be using dual analog controls and your thumb won't be in the direction that you think it is. It'll be just slightly shooting differently and you'll be missing everything. But this actually locked into a direction and made it easier.
Yeah, so it practically somehow, like, you know, it irons out you moving your gamepad, you know, when you have it in your hands, you know, you move it left and right and all this. So, and with the analog stick, which is really sensitive, you know, every movement would make an impact on your direction. And we figured out that actually, if you're moving your gamepad, you know, you're just, you know, your ship starts moving involuntarily.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. So that's why we introduced this kind of thing. And I think it really works cool.
And then I also noticed every time you shoot, it kind of pushes your ship back a little bit. So yeah. I like that you can't just hold a direction and then like read a magazine or something. You have to actually pay attention and make sure that you're keeping your ship where you want it to be while shooting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got like there are like a number of feedbacks that we used to get from people on Steam. It's like, oh, this like I have solved this game. Like, you just point in one direction and sit in that corner. Like, yeah, well, then you just play the game for 1 minute, I think. Because it's not just like that it works that way.
I'll admit, there were some stages where, like, a bunch of enemies are coming out, and I would park myself in a corner and just shoot and try taking out everything, but you can't get lazy and just stay in a corner, because enemies might start coming from that corner, and then you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly.
I have lost so many shields by being in a corner and an enemy coming out of that corner that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that's very likely. yeah, that's that thing. The other thing is that ended up as a full feature in the game, but we started with that feature really as an aid when we were testing the game. It's a space dive. Did you try that maneuver?
Oh, I have used that a lot when like if I'll take a shot and I go from my three bullets down to two, or if I get hit twice and I'm down to one bullet, and there's just a ton of enemies shooting at me, I will spam the shit out of that dive button so that I can get under all the bullets and move to a safe area. I really, really like that addition.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. As I said, we implemented this feature because it really helped us while we were testing. But then we realized very quickly that could be, you know, something that is really going to stand out our game as a design feature from maybe other shooter games. Because here's the thing. You have a number of players who are going to pick up the game, and some of those players are like old school hardcore players, which are going to say, okay, all the bullets that are coming at me, you know, I have to avoid them, I have to do this and that, and if I lose my life, fine. Now, you're going to have a bunch of these kids who are playing, you know, other games which have like a trillion ton of tutorials, which, by the way, was not the case in like early 90s or 80s.
Yeah.
So you would have kids who say like, oh, I was shield on level number one. Well, this way, you know, at least we can, this is kind of like getaway even for the players who are not so much skilled, but it can help them to build the skill along during the game. The way how I play it usually is I would play without space dive. I would really, really use it if it's really such a mess on the screen where that's the last resort. Like, yeah. I just need to go down because I like to just move around and crazily, frenetically just shoot at the enemies. Because that is the whole point of it, and just clear them as much as you can. So it turned out that this feature really helped us to gain the audience, I would say, of a younger age. That's how I would phrase it without trying not to insult anyone.
Yeah, it is definitely saved my ass a few times, so I appreciate that being there.
All right.
So, what led to the whole resource development in the game and managing all the different resources and having all the upgrades cost different resources in addition to credits? What led to that idea?
Well, an inspiration to inspiration from one really, really old game, which had that, but not to that extent. Do you remember a game which was called Xenon 2 Mega Blast?
No, I don't.
So that's the game from... It was done by Bitmap Brothers from UK in early 90s. That was the game which was very popular on Amiga and on early PCs. That game had that, but no to such extent like this one. And you know, I enjoyed that part a lot in that game, and I said, like, one day I'm gonna make this in my game, but it's gonna have something else. So that was an inspiration. So we one thing led to another when we started designing. So we designed the whole economy, and then we designed the whole thing how you can trade resources, and we figured out that giving resources as rewards to your missions is kind of an interesting thing for rewards just than the pure score points, because if you play the game in a story, in a campaign mode, in a story mode, you would figure out actually that there are no score points in the game. You actually don't have score anywhere.
Yeah, I noticed that. I enjoyed the fact
because it's not about the score.
Yeah, everything I blew up actually gave me money, which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's about having fun. It's about having fun blasting things up. You know, it's that's the whole premise. Like, I wanted really people to have fun, and even the story mode and where you have campaign and you have quests and you have like. You have a notification on the mission control screen, like which mission guides you to solving the current quest or the next quest. Even so, you don't really have to think a lot about where did you stop since your last game session. You know, you just turn on the console, start playing it, and you know, you very easily pick up where you left. And the whole basic idea and the premise is to have a very simple game, which is simple at the surface. If you want to dive in, you know, into the whole resource management and all this, you can, but you don't have to. You can just, you know, go ahead, pick up, you know, your route, your missions, and just, you know, play arcade missions. What happened to me is, like, I played probably, like, there is a total of 40 quests out of 60 missions, That's the ratio. Because certain missions, you're going to, certain routes, you're going to have to play twice. But there's a reason for it, explained in the campaign text. When you pick up the game, I used to play I would play 10 missions without even caring about did I upgrade the ship or not. And then when I piled up the money and all this, then I went to the equipment store and really purchased some cool guns and drones and laser boosters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then continued further on. I have seen some guys, after every mission, you would go to the store and you would figure out, what can I trade here? What kind of different weapon I can act? If you want to play that way, you can play that way. If you don't care about that aspect at all, you just, you can go and play the arcade missions. So that's why I think that this game really has a value for different kind of players, because not every player is inclined to playing the game the same way.
Something I noticed, I'm not sure if this was an intended design or if it might be a bug, but I noticed that the credits that you earn in missions don't carry over from mission to mission.
What do you mean?
After one stage where I have 1,600,000 credits, if I play another stage, all that money that I previously had was gone. So the only way that I have found to basically keep the money I've earned is to invest it into other resources.
Okay, this is interesting.
I possibly find a bug in the PlayStation version?
It might be. It might not. I'll have to double check that. I know we have tested. It should not be that way. The credits should stick with you. So,
because I was saving up to try and earn a new ship, and I'm like, oh well, it's 6 million credits. Let me do this mission. And I had one of the big boss style enemies at the end that have all the shields and everything on it, and I blew it up, and I earned 1.6 million through that run. And I'm like, oh, I'm getting close. Let me do a couple of more missions here. And then after the next one, I noticed I was down to 300,000, and I was confused, and it kind of clicked in my head that, oh, I guess my credits don't carry over from stage to stage, but that might just be a bug, I guess.
It might be a bug. I'm aware of that. If that's a bug, I can say we already found some other bugs. So we already.
Yay, I'm helping.
we're already planning a patch. So definitely something that we're going to look at. The thing is that now, without going really into details about the whole economy within the game, there are certain caps on your resources and what you can carry with you. But that manifests in a different way. So
I noticed my ship has 10,000 resource limit. So I've been investing into gold and cobalt and the more expensive ones to try and keep my cargo limit down.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm open to an idea that it's a bug. It's highly possible.
All right, that would make a little bit of sense. I honestly wasn't sure, if the credits just stayed maybe in the port that you were in, and they were localized credits, and they would just stay there. And if you went somewhere else, you had a new set. Or I thought maybe it's just a bug and it doesn't carry over, or it could have been an intentional design that could have been a way to encourage you to just, I guess, play the stock market and buy the different resources instead of just saving all your credits and not doing anything with them. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, no, that's a valid point where it can be a bug. So, yeah.
Something else I noticed was I really, really, really enjoy the music in the game, but when I'm playing the stages, I'm basically shooting all the time, which makes it harder to hear the music. So I actually went into the settings and lowered the sound effects, but while the explosions and everything else got quieter, the actual shooting didn't. I don't know if that's listed under something other than sound effects for volume management, but I figured I would bring that up as well.
Okay, good point. Now, those are sound effects, and they should be on the same volume as every other sound effect. So,
all right. What led to the soundtrack in the game? Because this is something I absolutely loved, where it's just good old-fashioned trance electronica, and it is every song I have heard so far is phenomenal.
Yeah, well, that's exactly one other aspect of this game, and that is that we have collaborated on a music production with a number of artists around the world. There are like guys from UK, from from England, from Scotland, from Egypt, from Netherlands, from States. Here also a couple of guys from Croatia. And there's a guy from France, and the lead musician guy who wrote the title score is from Italy, from Rome.
Wow.
He's actually also very, very known. Well, in Italy, he's very known composer for film and movies. So Giovanni Rotondo. On the music production, we had approximately, I think it was between 10 and 12 artists. We made this that the game is serves as a promotion platform for their work. One thing what you can notice is that every mission, when it starts, from the left edge of the screen, you get a small widget coming in and, you know, showing the name of the track and the name of the artist.
Yeah, I noticed that. I like that. So, you know, which artist is doing which stage. I really like that.
Yeah, exactly. So that is the part of the whole thing where, you know, in every mission we are promoting a person who made the track. So that was actually during the development and during our green light stage on Steam. We were running active campaign. There is a website and a company from UK who does things like that. So we have hosted on their portal advertising campaign. It's a portal which gathers producers and artists all around the world, you know, trying to connect them for gigs, for jobs and stuff like that. We advertised the campaign there, and all these guys really came through that website. So it's pretty much people that I really don't know in person. and they made we had certain criteria what we wanted for the tracks. We said we wanted the trance music. It should have no or very little vocals, because it really wouldn't, you know, fit in the game that somebody starts singing in the middle of the, you know, arcade level. So that was one of the hard requirements. There is one song which has a little bit of this, but it's more like, you know, some it was a good fit, so we didn't insist on removing it. And that's pretty much it. So we have licensed the music from those guys, and we are still actively promoting them on every occasion, especially for our social media accounts and things like that.
Well, I must say, mission accomplished on getting a good soundtrack, because I can guarantee that I have pissed off my downstairs neighbors by blasting the music while playing it.
We wanted to have the music to really be to add a production value to the game, and I'm glad that we managed to do that.
Yeah, and it's good because my neighbors downstairs are dicks and they're getting evicted, so the more I can piss them off, the better.
Well, there you go. So you have like two flies with the same stone.
So one of my co-hosts, his favorite question to ask developers is, while you were creating this game, what games did you play yourself to kind of relax, or after a long day of working on the title, what did you play to just decompress and enjoy your time off?
2048.
The number matching?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We have the version 3s on the Xbox One, and we have both sunk way too much time into that game. But we are terrible at it.
Yeah, I know. I would play sometimes really an awkward games. Like I would find myself playing a games which are like 10 or 15 years old. Yes. I know. I think maybe a month ago or something like that, I went and played Warcraft 2, you know.
Hey, nothing's wrong with that. That's good quality old school gaming.
Oh yeah, well, it really took me a bit to, you know, be able to run it. So, but yeah, and I would still play like dungeon crawlers from like mid 90s and things like that. But yeah, I enjoyed in 2048.
Yeah, we all love our retro gaming. I will always find reasons to fire up Earthbound for the Super Nintendo every chance I can.
Oh yeah.
So what other games did you play while making the game, or what other games are you playing now that you're enjoying?
Well, right now, I'm already playing my new games. that takes a better part of my time right now. Not much that I can play right now. I'm quite busy with a new title that we have just released 2 weeks ago on Early Access. So you're building up that. And
what title is that? Tell us a bit about that one.
So that game is called Solar Division. Solar Division is practically a second game from the Zotrix series.
All right.
So we'll see how that game is going to go. But basically, Zotrix itself is an arcade space shooter. Solar Division, it's like if you play Zotrix, you have probably read where it's Solar Division within the game. So it's all really interconnected. So Solar Division is a different aspect of the same universe. It's coming from more of the strategy point. So in Zotrix, you were protecting the merchant cargo ships from one station to another, and things like that. In Solar Division, what you're doing, you're protecting the stations in a tower defense game.
Yeah.
So it's the same universe. If you start Solar Division, if you play it, you have the same stations, the same description of the stations. It's just, you know, totally different. There are even like same or very similar Zotrix enemies, which are attacking now your towers, and you're doing you're planning a different kind of strategy to defend your structures. So that's basically it. The game just came out, we also have quite the big plans for it. So we'll see how far will that go.
Nice. If it does well, do you think that's something else that might show up on consoles?
Definitely, we already have, right now the game is played only with the mouse, but we do already have, and when we were designing the game, we were designing with having a gamepad controls in mind.
Nice.
So we already have an idea, and the game is going to get the gamepad support. The desktop version, PC, Mac, and Linux version is going to get the desktop support, and then we're going to see how to move that to the consoles as well.
Nice. That would be a nice title to come to consoles as well. The more that we get on console, the better, because I have honestly never been a huge PC guy, so... The more games I get to play, the better it is for everybody else in the world. And I'm the only one that matters. So.
Fair enough.
So was it a challenge bringing Zotrix from the PC to the console and adjusting it for gamepad?
No. The reason for that now is because it already had a support for gamepad on PC. We did make certain adjustments, but basically the game on the PC was already in the shape, so it was not that challenging. Neither from technical aspect, it was more that we actually the thing is there are certain things that we have improved in a game because we made those improvements first on PlayStation 4 version, and then we brought that back to PC version.
Were there any sections that you guys had trouble making work in just using the gamepad instead of also having a mouse?
The menu system is a bit, you can see that it's more suitable navigating it with a mouse than with a gamepad, but we really did the best that we could.
Yeah, you have
a couple of screens where you have like grid structures, and gamepads never welcoming to that kind of navigation system. So
yeah, I was actually going to ask if you guys were planning on going back and looking at menu navigation when you work on the Xbox port, or even if you issue any kind of patches for the PS4 version about upgrading or relooking at navigating the menus with possibly adding the analog stick in for in the map where you're selecting the different stations, because I have gotten lost navigating those menus so many times.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah, yeah. It is. The irony is the navigation, the full navigation actually originally worked on analog sticks, and then we moved it to D-pad. But that was a trade-off because it proved that, I'd say, on D-pad was less annoying than on analog sticks. But you're right when you're pointing that maybe certain screens really would enjoy have the controls reworked, maybe to use the analog stick instead of the D-pad and things like that. So everything's possible. It's definitely that we are going to look at that from another angle again and all this.
So what's the reception been like so far for the PS4 version based on the American release? Have you been getting any good feedback on it?
I can say that we got more positive than negative, so that's already good. So far that I'm seeing reviews, it's in the area between like 65 and 85 points out of 100. So it's good. I mean, considering the fact that it's really our first game on like such console, such platform, I'm happy so far.
Yeah, I would probably give it in the higher range of there, probably a solid 80, 85. I'm having an absolute blast with the game. I love how deep it is compared to what I expected out of it. my only real concern so far is just the menu navigation, and then I guess the audio bug that with the sound effects and the credits not carrying over. But I guess you're gonna look into those. But I'm having a blast.
Yeah, but those like things are gonna get ironed out through a patch or something, and that's gonna sit on its own place. Yeah, I understand the navigation, and we were aware of that. We were aware of the challenge with the navigation in the menus. I really believe that we're going to find a way to, you know, smooth it out.
It seems like it should be it's not too hard to deal with. Just sometimes I'll find that when I'm browsing menu, I'll kind of get lost, and I'll hit back and exit it and then go back in and try over.
Well, yeah. You can always do something like that. That's true.
I'm just waiting. I'm going to keep playing until I could start affording more ships, because I have noticed, actually, the very first time I did the campaign, I wasn't really paying too much attention to where I was going. And I'm just like, oh, well, let me try this one. Oh, this is at the top of the list. That's obviously the one I have to work on first. And it ended up bringing me to an area where the only paths I could take to leave there were all 7 difficulty or higher, and I had no upgrades at all.
I
had to completely start a new campaign because I couldn't progress from there.
Yeah, if any player ends up in a situation like that, for that purpose actually serves the map screen, because on the map screen, when you lock yourself to a certain station, you can see which routes are leading out, and next to that route there's a number at the center of the line which shows also the difficulty for that route. So if you get lost, you can go to the map screen and you can figure out what's the shortest way for you to get back to a station from which then you have an easier way forward. So what I just said would be probably too much text in a tutorial screen. So we just figure out, oh, they're going to be fine.
It was all my fault because I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. I just went to the wrong place at the start of the game, and I honestly couldn't fight my way out of it. I kept dying every time I tried. Thankfully I wasn't too far in, so I just restarted and I paid more attention, and I am doing much better now. I think I'm working on mission 15 so far. But I have also just jumped around from area to area a lot as well. It's just fun, just going through stages, blowing shit up.
Yeah, well, that's what you have to do.
The only thing I wish is that when you started a new area, instead of starting back with the basic one-shot gun, is that you could keep that 3-shot gun. Because I've noticed so many stages you'll start out and it just swarms you right away, and I'm panicking, trying to hold everything off until those upgrades come down the screen. But it's fun to get your blood pressure up, freaking out, and then those upgrades come, and then you start taking everything out, and everything just clicks, and it's a really, really fun feeling.
Yeah, I agree.
So what else has your company worked on? You mentioned that in the past you've worked on Serious Sam titles,
Yeah, but that's the when I that, that's when I was employee with another company.
Yeah, what other companies have you worked for? You mentioned that you've been in the industry since 87. What other companies have you worked with?
Well, not in the industry. Let's say like I'm building games since 87.
All right.
Like being in the industry is where when you get paid. In 87, I was a kid. So.
All right.
Anyway, I worked at the crowd team and I worked at Big Blue Bubble. The titles that my company, the Ocean Media, that worked on its, we made, we are now in the ninth year for the company, and we made around 70 games so far. So,
wow.
It's really a huge production. We made a lot of games for Nintendo DS, and those were mostly really like casual games, hidden object games, match-free games. There were some time management games. We did a lot of ports, like from a PC version to Nintendo DS. We really specialized at one point to that. So we brought, I think, like 20 games from PC to Nintendo DS.
Wow.
There were some really cool titles. We did match-free games, which were really popular, were Four Elements and Around the World in 80 Days and Fishdom. And the games like that. So those are really popular casual games, like, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago on a PC. On the most of the games that you would, you know, see on the Big Fish games and portals like this. So that kind of games, like our games were usually distributed through those channels. So I don't know, it's there's nothing, you know, big and soundy that really can stand out. It was like a number of games which were popular in that segment and genre.
All right. So we are creeping up on near an hour here. Is there anything else that you wanted to discuss about Zotrix or Solar Division or anything else that you're working on?
Well, I know. It's pretty much, I think we covered really a lot. Not much that could come to my mind. We covered pretty much every aspect of the game.
How's Croatia at this time of year? Is it still chilly out there? Is it doing well?
we are on the zero. So it's around zero. So it's on the freezing point. So it's like pre-Christmas time, it's really cool to go out in the city because it's nicely decorated and there's a lot going on, you know, like people with the cooked wine and the sausages and stuff like that. So it's all holiday season already starting heavily. So
yeah, we have that over here as well. Got Christmas music playing everywhere and you can't escape it.
Oh yeah, totally. Like I usually, it marks when the Christmas starts, when I hear, you know, Wham song, Last Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes it starts mid-November and I say, okay, this is it. Now we are pulling out the Christmas tree and let's just decorate it right now.
My friend Dale North, he did a cover of Last Christmas. I should let you check that out sometime.
that would be fun.
A lot of people know Dale North. He was the former editor-in-chief of Destructoid, but before that, he was a musician first, and that's what he's been doing again, and it's cool to see him working on music again.
Awesome.
Oh, man. So I want to thank you for coming on and talking with me. It is really cool that I went from not knowing anybody at all ever from Croatia to talking to Little Green Men and now you in the span of a week and a half. I've now met three different Croatian game developers.
Well, there you go. We are just popping out one by one. So.
I was going to say, is there a budding game division, game development company over there? Who else from Croatia could we get on this show?
Probably a number of guys. There are guys who worked on Payday 2. They actually have office here. Like, it's like a branch from Starbreeze. And a number of other guys. I know it's that there are guys. So who did you mention before? You said Starpoint Jam, that's Little Green Man, and who else?
Just Mario and Zeno from there.
Okay, there are also guys who made the Red Solstice. That's actually that's really quite a big hit on Steam. Third-person space shooter thing, kind of like up to 4 or 8 co-op game, kind of interesting. There are actually a number of guys. I mean, the community is quite vibrant here, especially in the last couple of years, and more people are releasing games on consoles and more on Steam, so... it's a community who is growing, so it's looking good.
It's really cool hearing how big some different game development communities can be getting in different countries, where, you know, a few months ago, the only people I knew in game development were just a handful of friends who got into it in the audio side, and now doing this show and doing all these interviews. You know, I've talked to people from Canada, from Croatia, from South Korea, from Australia, and it's really cool hearing all these different areas through the world and how their game development communities are getting. And some areas have small budding communities, others like Australia are just packed with developers. And it's really awesome talking to them and talking to you. And I absolutely thank you for coming on. It has been a blast chatting with you. You are welcome back anytime.
No problem. Great stuff. Yeah. Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, do you have any final words for our listeners out there?
Yeah, let the force be with you.
Okay, let's begin.